Blessed be the darkness, the vast expansion, the all-encompassing, all-surrounding womb of space. Blessed be the light, the penetrating point, the all-focusing, all-aligning core of creation. Blessed be the blade that divides the darkness from the light, thus generating duality, and from duality is all substance formed. The cleansing by water, the purity of salt, combining together, so merged we exalt. By the blade that separates the darkness from the light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I conjure this circle as a sacred place, shifting the confines of time and space, an island apart and a fortress between yesterday's sorrow and tomorrow's dream. Blessed be the vessel wherein the divided may unite. Welcome to the fifth episode of the Covening Podcast. I am your host, Lady Sitara. In the last episode, I provided the spoken word component of a complete windblown traditional full moon ritual. That episode distilled and culminated the first three episodes of the Covening Podcast. The topics for this episode are ritual timing, dark moon charge of the goddess, moon lure, an overview of the Sabbats, and specifics about the upcoming Candlemas, Ladies' Day, Breed's Day, Sabbat, and an Upshakina ritual. What are the witches' holidays, that is, holy days, and when and how do we celebrate? Ooh, I know the answer! The full moons, the dark moons, the first day and the middle day of every season. Well, that might be the answer, and for many traditions, that is the answer. In Windblown, you would get an A- for that answer, which is acceptable. If you wanted an A+, you would also add Thanksgiving, possibly your own birthday, and that any day, maybe Earth Day or Arbor Day, can become a witch holiday with sufficient reason. Or perhaps every day already is a holy day, even if we don't observe a few of them. But that still only answers the first question and not the other two questions. When do we celebrate and how do we celebrate? Now the answer gets trickier because different traditions of the old religion have their own procedures and protocols regarding the holidays. Covens within those traditions may have their own unique idiosyncrasies. Plus, different pantheons and cultural reconstruction may modify the dates of the holy days. Windblown is a teaching tradition that encourages graduates to serve whatever pantheon calls to them within a Wiccan framework. What that means is that my coven might be using god names and texts from ancient Mesopotamia, the Hittites, the Hurrians, but other covens of the Windblown tradition might be oriented towards the Welsh pantheon or Irish, or some pantheon out of Africa, or Eastern Europe, or Asia, or South America, or Australia. The possibilities are many. So I have molded my pantheon, holidays, and text to fit into a Wiccan construct. Some parts of it required more adaptation than others. Some covens celebrate the full moons and not the dark moons. Some covens celebrate the full moons and the first crescents. So when does a coven celebrate the full moon? Do you celebrate it at the hour that the moon is astrologically opposite the sun from the vantage point of the earth? That would be difficult. The exact full moon might be at 5 or 6 a.m. Check out an almanac, maybe online. Here are the Windblown guidelines. First, and this rule is true for Sabbats as well as Esbats, we have a preference for observing the holiday on the making tide rather than the breaking tide. What that means is that in general, we prefer to observe before the seasonal or astrological event rather than after. Second, we try to get as close to the lunar or seasonal event as practical. We need to accommodate our coveners who have employment and obligations that put time constraints on them. So this is something we work out as a coven. We consider the full moon energy to extend for a couple of days, so up to 3 days before or 1 day after would be optimal. 4 or 5 days before would still be acceptable. We usually celebrate the full moons during the evening hours, any time after sunset in the winter, and any time after 7 p.m. in the summer. These are guidelines. The equivalent applies to dark moons. In the 1990s, when my coven met, my coveners traveled straight to my home after work. I fed them lentil parsnip soup before we started ritual so that they wouldn't be circling on an empty stomach. It usually took about an hour for everyone to arrive, during which time we had social hour and some teaching sessions, and then another 20 minutes or so to finish eating and lessons and change before we entered the circle. We almost always met for full moon. We might skip once a year if I was out of town. We weren't nearly as strict about dark moons. We'd hold dark moons at least a few times a year, and especially if we had dark moon magic that needed to be done. The reason we preferred the making tide rather than the breaking tide for holding ritual was so that we could take advantage of the energies around the moon for magic. At the full moon, or just before the full moon, is the best time for magic of things you want to increase and attract, stay the course and enhance. Dark moon magic is for things you want to decrease, transmute, repel, or restrict. As for how, you have the Covening Podcast's first 4 episodes as instruction and examples. And we have a dark moon today, Tuesday, January 28th. So you know what to do. You can use the full moon ritual from the last podcast with one exception. Here is a sample charge for the dark moon goddess. I am the crone and hag queen. Dread mistress of the underworld, I sit naked on my throne. My hair is long and black, and those who enter my dark abode shall not return to the world of light. Though I am also a healer of the sick, I am she who watches over those who know no goddess. I am the unseen goddess. Ford the black waters of the river Hubar to the dark stairway beneath the mountain. There are 7 gates to my palace of lapis lazuli, 7 gatekeepers to the land of Kutha. Yet I know all the world of the living and all the world of the dead. I know the worlds of gods and demons. I am mistress of the cord that runs through all. I am the queen of darkness. I can claim your health and your strength. I lie latent and lurking, the mother who bears you into death. I am the changing goddess, lady of the beyond, and I shall bestow a great treasure on those who honor me and fear me not. Dark moon magic is for things you want to decrease, transmute, repel, or restrict. This dark moon is aligned with, conjunct with, the sun in Aquarius, the sign of the water bearer, which is paradoxically associated with the element of air. The modality for Aquarius is fixed. So what kind of magic is best done at this dark moon? Magic that involves communication and messaging. Being a fixed sign is a clue. You can't ease into this. You will have to break something. Suppose you wanted to do some magic that involved contacting the deep mind of other people who hold strong opinions or beliefs, getting them to see the world differently. Or maybe you want to bind the communication villain at its source. Maybe it would change its message, or maybe it would have difficulty connecting with an audience, or maybe its broadcast would have technical difficulties. Any of those would be a nice target. There's Aquarius pouring water from that urn or jar. I say we need to smash that urn. Let's do it the safe way and wrap our small ceramic urn, the one we found at a local thrift shop, in a cloth or cloth bag before we smash it. We are barefoot in circle, so it is probably not a good idea to step on it. A baseball bat would do nicely. Hopefully, we have remembered to purify both the baseball bat and the urn and brought them into circle in advance so that we can use them for this working. If we have a lot of preparation time, maybe an artistic covener has painted some nice sigils on the bat. We wrap the urn in a cloth bag and put it into a large cauldron or container that we can lay on the ground. At the appropriate time in our dark moon circle, we move our center altar a bit to the north so that we can all gather around the cauldron. We can either dance and chant or chant without dancing, and at the end of the chant, we will all need to put our hands on the handle of the bat and then push the bat down into the urn with the strength of our arm muscles to smash the urn. If we are just standing and chanting, we can maintain our hands on that bat handle throughout the entire chant. Whatever we choose, we will need an increasing pace for it so that we can smash the urn at the crescendo. Now let's come up with a good chant, and let's do the repetition 9 times. Here's a sample. Feel free to write your own. To the rich they give, from the poor they steal. His empty glamour has lost its appeal. We are not the liar's sheep. Promises made that he won't keep. Watch what they do and not what they say. That's the clarity we gain today. To the rich they give, from the poor they steal. His empty glamour has lost its appeal. We are not the liar's sheep. Promises made that he won't keep. Watch what they do and not what they say. That's the clarity we gain today. On the 9th repetition, we all bring our collective weight and strength into the bat and press it hard into the urn. If that does not smash it, then we can each individually take turns pummeling the urn. When the urn is smashed, in unison we all proclaim, "So mote it be." A few technical reminders. I'm using the word we because in order to do magic, we have to acknowledge that we are all connected, and we have to be cognizant of this connection. Throughout the chant, imagine that the change we want is already happening and feel gratitude for that change. When we claim, "So mote it be," it must be accompanied with more gratitude and the certainty that the change will occur. Here's some general information about the moon that every witch should know. From the vantage point of the earth, when the moon is full, it is in the opposite place in the sky than the sun. When we say the moon is dark, what we really mean is that the night sky is dark. The dark moon is located in the same direction as the sun, a conjunction in astrological terms. So, if the sun appears to be in the zodiac sign of Aquarius from the vantage point of the earth at dark moon, the moon is also in Aquarius. But the full moon will be in the opposite sign of the zodiac. That would be Leo. If the sun is in Aquarius, the full moon is in Leo. If the sun is in Pisces, the full moon is in Virgo. If the sun is in Aries, the full moon is in Libra. If the sun is in Taurus, the full moon is in Scorpio. What is the relationship between the sun and the moon during a full moon. The zodiac sign of the full moon and the sun will share the same modality, in other words, cardinal, mutable, or fixed, but their elements will be different. When the sun is in an earth sign, the full moon is in a water sign, and vice versa. When the sun is in an air sign, the full moon is in a fire sign, and vice versa. The first crescent moon will be in the next sign after the dark moon. So when a dark moon is in Aquarius, the first crescent will be in Pisces. The word month originally meant lunar cycle, but the lunar cycle is 29.5 days, and our solar cycle is approximately 365 days. Neither 29 nor 30 go into 365 evenly. 30 times 12 is 360, which leaves 5 and occasionally 6 days as a remainder. In the West, the solar calendar was chosen in preference to the lunar calendar, and our months are all screwy and uneven. The Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, and each new month begins at sunset, because that's when the new day begins, with the sighting of the first sliver of new crescent moon. What do we mean when we say the crescent moon is rising in the west? That expression refers specifically to the first sliver of the new crescent moon. If the sun and the moon were running a race in our sky, at dark moon they are neck and neck, and then as the days progress, the sun pulls ahead so that the sun sets earlier than the moon. When the sun sets earlier than the moon becomes visible to us. So after the dark moon, the first sighting of the first sliver of new moon, sometimes called Diana's bow, will be in the west just after sunset. The moon may rise in the west, but the moon also sets in the west. From new moon to full moon, the moon is said to be waxing or glowing rounder. From the full moon to the dark moon, the moon is waning or glowing slimmer. With each passing day in a lunar month, the moon rises later and later, and each day it becomes visible further east in our sky. Whatever time zone you live in, the full moon will be almost straight overhead, with a little to the south in the northern latitudes and a little to the north in the southern latitudes, at midnight. We perceive the full moon at its apex at midnight. When we see the moon during daylight hours, it is usually the waning moon. The bright part of the moon waxes from west to east. What about the ocean tides? If you look up a tide table, you will see that there is at least one high tide and one low tide every day. The high tides are highest and the low tides are lowest at both the full and the dark moon. In other words, the high tides are highest and the low tides are lowest when the moon and the sun are either aligned or directly opposing each other in our sky. The full moon has a different name each month and associated lure. I will be presenting those as those events come upon us. After the death of my husband, I had a very difficult time adjusting to life without his physical presence. I was incapable of leading a coven, but I needed to connect with other witches. During that period, I was graciously welcomed as a guest by the Rowan Tree Church, led by Reverend Paul and Reverend Jerry. And now, Reverend Paul has passed, and we all miss him. Reverend Jerry is continuing to lead services. I'm mentioning them because they associate every full moon with a specific herb and present that lore within the circle at their full moons. Now for the Sabbats. We also celebrate the Sabbats on the making tide, or preferably on the exact day itself. But at what hour of the day or how we celebrate varies widely. And the names for the holidays themselves, and sometimes which exact date should be observed, may also vary depending on the culture or pantheon being honored. It is always safe to call the quarter days the first day of each season by their calendar designation, winter or summer solstice, vernal or autumnal equinox. But what about the cross-quarter days, the middle days of each season? Groundhog Day, May Day, Loaf Harvest, Hallows. Groundhog Day, what is that about? Where did that come from? It doesn't seem to be a Christian holiday. It only makes sense if you realize that Groundhog Day is a cross-quarter day. It is the middle day of the season of winter, being the halfway point between winter solstice and the vernal equinox. For Sabbats, the timing, when we celebrate or observe, will be dictated by how we celebrate. I'm going to provide a bunch of examples, and then I'll tell you what I have done, which is different from what other windblown covens have done, particularly those honoring different pantheons. It seems like a discussion of the Sabbats is a good time to mention outer court and inner court. Each initiated witch is a member of the priesthood of Wicca, witchcraft, or the old religion. As a member of the priesthood, we study the mysteries, and we have made a serious commitment to our gods, our religion, according to the oaths we have taken. But there are others who also celebrate the Sabbats and maybe moons, pagans and the uninitiated, people who are attracted to nature, crystals, spells, fantasy fiction involving witches, goddess art. They may even call themselves witches or New Age or spiritual. They may call themselves atheists. These people are our acquaintances, friends, relatives, allies, lovers, and a few of them will at some point become initiates. But that is and will be their choice. Collectively, we call them outer court. The Sabbats, especially, may have an outer court component and an inner court component. On Hallows, we have trick-or-treating and costume parties, haunted house parties. That is outer court. The participatory ritual of the goddess's descent to the underworld would be inner court. Egg coloring and egg hunting and ducklings and chicks and baskets relate to outer court celebration of the vernal equinox. I'll add to that kite flying and pinwheels. The participatory enactment of the battle between Marduk and Tiamat would be inner court. Outer court tends to be general European folk traditional, seasonal celebrations, perhaps celebrated publicly or in large groups, whereas inner court tends to be participatory enactments related to the specific coven pantheon and observed in our smaller coven group. But sometimes attending outer court events is sufficient. When members of the priesthood attend, all the symbolism makes sense to us. We can appreciate the celebration on multiple levels. Sometimes, especially in the Pacific Northwest, the outer court observances and opportunities are so numerous and lavish that the inner court could easily be changed into all coveners just meeting up at the outer court events. May Day Morris dancing at dawn requires an early rise, then the fairy maypole later in the day and associated festivities. Or, at summer solstice, Seattle's infamous parade. But suppose you are a new elder and you have not yet written or collected all the pantheon-specific workings or dramas for the upcoming Sabbat, but you want to celebrate privately within your coven. just make a few seasonal modifications to the full moon ritual. Do we do magic on the Sabbats? There are actually lots of varied answers to this question. Let me start with some examples from my own coven. Generally, we don't do magic on the Sabbats, but if there is a compelling need, that guideline bends. There is also Sabbath-specific magic we might do on the Sabbats. For example, at Yule, we have a Yule log, which is actually a log with drilled holes for candles. Each person in the circle gets one candle and one wish for the coming year. At autumn equinox, we make paper tokens representing qualities or substances we want to shed from our lives, and we burn those tokens in the fire while chanting an elimination spell in Hittite, Nessian. If we are in a facility where fire is not permitted, we use small pebbles and a vat of salt water. In the waxing part of the year, we could make wishes while planting seeds. Now that I have given you some general information about Sabbats, let's get specific about Groundhog Day, because that is approaching. Many witches call this holiday Imbolc, and it is always spelled that way, whether you pronounce it Imbolc with the B or Imolc. Also called Candlemas, Ladies' Day, Bridget's Day, or Breed's Day. That breed is spelled like bride. You can also pronounce the goddess's name Brigitte, Brigitte, or Bridget. Your pronunciation will reveal your home county. The significance of the holiday is the early herald of spring, and the intention of the Sabbat is purification in preparation for spring or new birth. Daylight is increasing. If you live somewhere with hard frosts, there may be some thawing midday, perhaps a good time to collect maple sap. In milder climates, the crocuses might be blooming. Our Sabbat cycle is a cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. In Feraferia, a modern pagan reinterpretation of the Eleusinian mysteries, the god has died, but the goddess is pregnant with new life. Her water breaks at Imbolc, which is humorous because she doesn't give birth to the new god until the vernal equinox, which sounds like a 1.5-month labor. But time functions differently for the gods. Because of my experience with Feraferia, I have incorporated water, crystals, tinkling chimes, and candlelight into my coven midwinter ritual. But because I am honoring my Mesopotamian pantheon, we are enacting the meeting of the gods at Upshukina, where the gods gather yearly to determine the fate of humanity. When and if they decide to allow humanity to continue for another year, they reestablish the natural order. Unlike our other rituals, this one takes place around a table, and we are seated on chairs. But we should consider the more popular observances of this witch holiday. In addition to purification, preparation for spring and new birth and reestablishment of natural order, the Sabbat is also associated with creativity, especially of words as in poetry, music, and construction as in blacksmithing, all of those being associated with the goddess Breed. Perhaps you would add the Empress tarot card and a saucer of milk to your altar as offerings for Breed. What my coven does at this holiday is different from everyone else's observance, and I want to expose you to what others are doing, because theirs is the more regular observance. Fortunately for us, we live in a time of internet and YouTube, and there are at least a few good Candlemas videos out there. I've been trying to find an actual in-coven Candlemas ritual instead of just talking heads, and those are hard to find. I would like to particularly recommend the video celebrating Imbolc on Ginny Metherall's channel. How to celebrate Imbolc Candlemas on the Bewitching Bemused channel, and Imbolc Online Sabbat 2021 on the Triple Goddess Coven channel. As for music, I listen to Ice Flowers Melting by Sylvan Gray every year on Candlemas, and classical music played on the glass harmonica, and Gymnopédies by Erik Satie. Singing bowls or sound baths are also good music for this day. Here is the Upshukina ritual. We start in the usual way with the blessing of darkness and light, except that we keep our heads covered with our hoods throughout the entire ritual until just before the end. We cast our circle around the dining room table. The circle is cast in a malleable bubble surrounding us. Instead of evoking the elements in the usual way, we use striking the bell only. 4 bell strikes in the north for earth, 1 in the east for air, 3 in the south for fire, and 2 in the west for water. We have our wands with us, no athames for this rite. We each have a clear quartz, smoky quartz, or amethyst crystal, a white candle, and a blue bowl, preferably translucent, containing salt water, in front of us. The Sabbat cake and wine are on the table, as are small plates, goblets, or chalices. A covenor in the south speaks. How foolish and destructive these human creatures are. We have given them a beautiful planet with everything they could possibly need or want, and what do they do? Turning towards the west, they poison the water. Turning towards the east, they poison the air. Turning towards the north, they poison the very soil they use to grow their own food. A covenor in the east speaks. They do not value knowledge, discovery, and science, and when they do learn something new, they neglect to take precautions. Whatever they learn, unless it is something that will enhance their personal wealth, they will denounce or bury it, even if it is a cure for disease. They wipe out entire species when they have the knowledge to save them. A covenor in the west speaks. They do not even value their own relationships. They make war, destroy homes, and kill other people. They exploit any person they find who is more vulnerable than they are. There is food enough for all, and yet people starve. They have upset the natural balance by disrespecting women, and too often babies grow into children without family love. A covenor in the north speaks. Everything you say is true, and yet that is not all of humanity. There are people fighting to keep the air and the water clean, and to clean the poison out of it when it is already contaminated. There are brave reporters who publish and broadcast, who will not allow knowledge and information to be suppressed. There are many humans who, so long as their essential needs are met, will work to make the world a better place and not amass wealth by exploiting others. There are loving families and strong women who stand up for all women and strong men who are their allies. There are musicians who produce beautiful music and artists who make wonderful art, and the scientists themselves are still working and discovering, even when their discoveries do not yield them wealth. We could end all of this, but what happens if we do? They have made progress, and that progress will be lost. In the past, when humanity was on the brink of making progress, it was contained by location. Humanity is now on the brink of a revolution of values, shifting towards empathy. But this time, communication can travel all around the world within a day. We lose nothing by allowing them to continue another year. I want to see what they do with the governments that are seizing power away from the people. Will they be able to defeat them? Let us share cakes and wine and meditate on the fate of humanity. The wine is poured, and the Sabbath cake is passed around, and each covenor breaks off a piece of it. After all have had their fill of wine and cakes, the covenor in the north addresses them. We need to assess ourselves as well as humanity. This is the silent part of our ceremony. We have a procedure by which each covenor will look into the eyes of every other covenor. The first covenor to be designated as receiver is either in the north or the northeast. Each covenor will have a 2-minute turn as receiver. After that, a bell will sound, signaling the time that the person to their left becomes receiver. So we go around the table in a clockwise, Jeschel motion. When it is your turn to be the receiver, you put your crystal on your plate in front of you. Everyone around the table will be looking at you, trying to meet your eyes. You must look into the eyes of each covenor one by one. When you hear the bell, you put your crystal into the bowl of salt water, and the person to your left becomes the next receiver. When everyone in the circle has had a turn as receiver, the leader says, "The bowls in front of you contain the tears of humanity collected over the past year. The crystals are your eyes into the past. Arrange your bowl and candle so you can see the crystal in your bowl and meditate on it for 9 minutes until you hear the bell." After 9 minutes, the bell sounds and a rinse bowl of just water is passed around. The leader says, "Use this water to wash away the tears of the past year from your crystal." The leader says, "Shall we reset the order of nature and give our human creatures another opportunity to find their path to the righteous way?" One of the coveners says, "Let us give them a sign and send them a clue so they will know they are on the right path." And the leader says, "And what shall that sign be?" Now you need to wing it, because this is something that the coven needs to devise or predict on its own. When you have agreed on the sign, all coveners remove their hoods, gather in a standing circle, and chant a continuous Aum until hands are squeezed. You have now reestablished the natural order. You can strike a bell to dismiss the quarters. 4 bells in the north, 2 in the west, 3 in the south, and 1 in the east. Now disperse the circle and end the rite. We've run out of time. In future episodes, I'll be presenting the Windblown Degree System, our checklists, study material, initiation rites, providing some explanation for my decisions about what gets taught when, and some guidance about how we handle credit for past experience. Wishing all of you a fruitful dark moon, a joyous Breed's Day, Imbolc, Candlemas, and successful Apshukina. Contact me at covening.org. Click on Contact. Till next week, blessed be. By the blade that cleaves the darkness and light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I carve a tunnel to the mortal realm. As common persons, we are masked until the circle be recast. Sacred ground remain unseen. Silence rules the worlds between. Till next we answer magic's call and meet together, witches all.